Talk Show.
Recorded live.
What up, people? This is Speaking Like You Think It Radio. We're going to do a quick show tonight. I'm the host, Naj Know-It-All, joined by co-host, the one and only professor of all things sports, Mr. Craig Barzee. And we're also joined by sports expert of all things, even golf, I just found out, that boy G. Robinson.
What's happening?
Oh, man. I'm on NBA TV heavy, watching this joint, trying to see what they talking about with the draft, see if they talk me out of what I'm thinking so far, but, you know, it is what it is, man. Barzee just brought this up, so I'm going to go and say it so we can dead this for tonight. We ain't going to do no LeBron coverage tonight, man. I think that stuff is done. But I did want to ask the panel, though, did I go too soft on LeBron last week? You already know I've been getting text message punches from Naughty on that. He thinks so. But I wanted to get y'all opinion, though. Did I go too soft on LeBron last week? Let me go to Barzee first.
Nah, man. I mean, we all watched it. We know he's a great player, man. I mean, said what had to be said. He didn't show up. I mean, I don't know what else you could have said on him. I mean, the way people been killing that dude, man, it makes you feel like he was like a never was, man. You know, guy's a double MVP. You know, he's a double MVP. He's achieved stuff in the league, man. He came up short on the big stage. It is what it is, man. He talked a lot of noise, but he didn't come up big when it mattered, man.
Yep, that's what it come down to. Gordon.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. I mean, people want so bad to witness greatness that when it doesn't happen, that, you know, you really take it personally almost. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You want so badly for this guy to be so great. He has a great talent, but as of right now, he's not putting it to use. And we got to let him write his own book, you know. And judge him after that book is completed. You know, look back at it and say whether he was a great player after. You know, we tried to put the great player thing on him before, and with the King James and all that little stuff like that, that we put so much on him that when he's not living up to it, then people go so hard at the guy. And sometimes it's warranted, sometimes not. But, I mean, all in all, that's what he gets paid the big bucks for, man. So,
it's part
of it. Yeah, it come with the job, man.
I just be wanting people to fall back and just fall back, really look at things, and hold tight on going in so hard on stuff. Because, I mean, I want to take it to Kobe Bryant in Utah as a youngster throwing up those air balls. Let some people tell it he was done. That was it. This is who that guy is. And you got to give stuff time, man. You never know what can happen. So, yeah, I agree with y'all, man. I ain't think I went soft on dude. I thought it was all right, but just wanted to get the panel's opinion on that, man, whether I ain't go in enough on him. But it's not stopping there, man. We're going to deal with the NBA before we get into the other little side stories, man. I guess the hottest thing out there is Tony Parker being rumored to be traded for a top draft pick. Y'all thoughts on that, man? Is this a good move by San Antonio, if that's what they're trying to do? And should one of these teams grab him up? Let me go to Barzee.
Hell yes. Well, I mean, depending on what they can get for him, man, you know, if they're talking about, you know, a top 10 pick, you know, maybe someone to get that San Antonio team younger, yeah, it's a good move for them, man. Because, you know, they got a lot of old cats on that ball club, man. they want to stay relevant for the next, you know, 10 or so years, man, they got to inject some youth into that ball club. I mean, if I'm the Hawk, well, you know, hey, I like Tony Parker, man. I know he's established. You know, we'll see what the young point guard for the Hawks, you know, what he brings to the table for a whole year. But hell, man, you know, I'd be listening if I'm the Hawks. You know, I'd be listening if any other team, the Lakers, I'd be listening. I mean, Tony Parker is a proven commodity in the league, man. So if he is out there and he is available, man, depending on what you have to give up, you go talk and you go get him.
Yeah, I agree. Tony Parker's that dude, man. Gordon, where you at on this?
I'm not real big on this year's draft. I mean,
yeah,
I think it's a draft that'll be full of role players at best. I'm not sold on Kyrie Irving. I mean, I guess I just haven't seen enough of the guy for me to say I'd trade him to get somewhere around there to get to try to get Kyrie Irving or hope that, you know, whatever, or Irving or Knight from Kentucky, one of the a younger point guard. I mean, I feel San Antonio for wanting to get younger. That's you know, that's no problem, but is this the time to do it? I mean, I just don't feel like this draft is going to put up enough talent to bring you back to that championship level right now. You know, and I just don't see it.
But it's a financial thing, too, though, because you know they probably want to plug George Hill in.
Not only that, though, but who else can they trade that can net themselves some good, you know, get them a good infusion of youth back? I mean, they're not going to trade Ginobili. Duncan's over the hill. He's not going to warrant that kind of account. He's the best chip as far as you when you look at it, because they got a backup that, you know, they can plug in, and then they could use Tony Parker to get themselves younger so they could compete down the road.
Well, I'm not against them trading Tony Parker to get younger. What I am against is trading him to try to get into the draft. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to getting, you know, if you put him out there, you know what I'm saying, get some youth and inject it to the team. But I'm just saying, if you're looking to the draft to do it, then I'm kind of on the fence about that. I'm not too thrilled about that part of it. But if you're telling me you're going to trade him for a younger player, you know, and bring some youth in, let's say I'm sure they probably won't want to pick it up. But I'm just saying, just throwing it out there. We were talking about the Hawks. You trade a Josh Smith for Tony Parker or, you know, something around that. If you want to do something like that to get younger, okay, fine, I understand that, you know. But the draft, I'm not so hot on.
Yeah, because you could end up with nothing trying to move Tony Parker, come back, and you got a guy who can't even make the rotation. It's happened so many times in the league, man. But I don't know, man. I like the idea of them moving Parker, though, man. Makes a lot of sense for them just because they can't do as much as other teams as far as money, so they like the New England of the NBA. They got to make a move and cut money. So, I mean, we'll see what happens, man. We're going to get into these draft picks in a minute. So Ricky Rubio is coming to Minnesota. I want y'all thoughts on Ricky Rubio. And, you know, another rumor leaked out that the Lakers were trying to shop Odom or Gasol to get that number two pick out of Minnesota. Are they just trying David Kahn at this point? Like, just people not respecting that man, his ability as a GM? Gordon?
Well, which question do you want me to answer?
Oh, both of them, man, both of them.
Well, with Ricky Rubio, I mean, once again, I haven't seen enough of this dude to be sold. All I know is I knew coming out, when they were coming out, Brandon Jennings told the world, I run circles around this dude. You know what I'm saying? And everybody kind of laughed and kind of brushed dude off. And Brandon Jennings is a pretty good, pretty talented point guard. You know what I'm saying? He's not top flight. He's not the elite of the elite, but he's a good point guard. I mean, I watched him slice up Atlanta in the playoffs. So until I see this guy on the court playing ball, getting some results done, once again, you got to show me to make me believe in you. I'm just not going to say, because some guy saw you beat some people in Spain, that you ready for the NBA. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't know what that league is. It's like when you have a guy coming out of high school. If you're 6'10" and you average 30 points in high school, I can't be sold on you because I don't know if you were guarding, you know, 6'8", I mean 6'5" guys, 6'4" guys, 6'3" guys. Your talent level is not the same as up to yours. So Ricky Rubio, not so sold on. But in terms of the Lakers, man, I mean, the Lakers get – I think the Lakers just trying to put a bunch of feelers out there just to see what direction, what options they may have. You know what I'm saying? Not really just we want to get rid of Odom or we want to get rid of Gasol. We just throw some bait out there, see who bite at it, and then we start talking. We generate, you know, you just throw something out there, and then you can generate conversation. Maybe you don't want Gasol. Maybe somebody else won't buy them and say, okay, we start talking. But you have to generate trade talks. You know what I'm saying? You can't really sit back. A good GM won't sit back and just wait for somebody to come to you. You have to initiate these kind of talks. Trades don't happen just like, you know, just standing there. You say, well, I think I have a commodity, so I sit here and see who wants it. No, you got to go out there and you got to put it out in the atmosphere so somebody will know. I can always come holler at this dude. I know if I want some action, I can always come holler at old such and such. And you got to do that, I mean. So I think that's what they're doing right now. Everybody knows nobody like getting swept, and I think that really hurt them. So they go and like, okay, we need to change something. I don't think they know exactly what they want to change, but they know they need to change something. So they're just gonna throw a lot of stuff out there and see what sticks.
Yeah, good speculation by the Lakers on to me. I mean, why not throw it out there? I doubt anybody's going to bite, but why not? Barzy?
Yeah, man. What was the first question?
Your thoughts on Ricky Rubio.
Oh, yeah. Ricky Rubio, man, from what I've seen, man, you know, the way that they, you know, they've been waiting on this kid, and I thought they said it best this morning when I was watching First Take. I forgot who it was said it. I think it was Chris Broussard. He said, you know, the way they waiting on this kid, man, you think that he's coming to save the franchise, like he's that type of elite player. But really, he's better kind of player that you would want to put around, you know, have a good, solid team. He was like how, you know, how they had Rondo, you know, start,
yes.
How they started Rondo off. Rondo wasn't a big thing. They put him around other talent, and they let him mature. He was saying that with Rubio, that if, you know, people think that he's going to come in there and he's going to be this, this, and that, it might be another thing coming. From what I've seen of the kid, man, you know, he's an okay player, okay point, can't really shoot that great, man. Durrell will be out, man. I don't know if he's going to be able to play defense in the NBA to hold anybody. We'll have to see. From what I've seen of him, I don't think he has the foot speed enough to guard some of those elite point guards. You know,
in his defense, though, I will say he wasn't too bad out there in the Olympics guarding Paul and Durant. I will give him that.
He looked pretty decent, man. But you know, in the Olympic Games, like I said, you surround a pretty good talent.
Yep.
That Spanish squad, but I don't know, man. Cats like Rose. Westbrook,
yeah.
I don't know, man. He might be hurting when it comes to that, man. But these trades that are coming out here, man, that, you know, the Lakers talking about, man. I heard Iguodala for Odom. I heard, you know, Pau Gasol for Kevin Love and some damn pick, man.
Yeah, ain't no way in hell that's happening.
Yeah, I think it was Pau Gasol and Odom or something like that, man. But, you know, you know, it's just conjecture, man. Really, the Lakers, man, they just coming off a championship, what, 2 years ago, man?
Yeah.
I don't know necessarily they need to make change. They had a bad year, man. Cats played down. They laid down. They might could come back and still do it with the same damn team. They just need to get better, a little younger at that point.
That's
so I let Derek Fisher not eat up so many damn minutes. They need to have somebody who could come out there and start, hold down that point guard position, have Derek Fisher as a bench player. Now, you know, in his stage of the career, but it's just talk, man. You know, it's like Gordon said. They, you know, they're putting out. Sometimes you put out feelers out there. You want to see, you know, what people talking about, what you can get for your player, and you know, depending on if the price is right, you might bite. But you know, all of it is just conjecture right now. We'll see what happens on draft night.
Yeah, man. Tomorrow night, some deals are going down, and that's what I expect with Tony Parker. They're going to make a deal with Tony Parker. They're not going to take just a pick. I think they're going to wait to make sure the guy that they want will be there. You know what I mean? For the swap. So, and we'll see how that goes. The Nash rumor pretty much died. People talking about Nash was going to get moved, that died. Funny thing about Cuban, man, I don't know if y'all seen this on Deadspin. Ross Perot Jr., former part owner of the Mavericks, who still has like a 5% stake. They tried to bring legal action against Cuban, man, for putting so much money into the team and not bringing a lot of money to the shareholders. So Cuban basically filed his own legal brief about, you know, his team winning the championship, like saying that that's the ultimate sign that where he was putting the money was right, man. What do y'all think of Mark Cuban, man? Because, you know, there's the Dodger deal rumor out there that he might get into baseball now, too. What are y'all thoughts on Mark Cuban, man? I like the guy personally, but hear y'all thoughts on him.
Man, I like him, too. I mean, I think he's shown you that he's a good owner. You know what I'm saying? And he's top flight. You know, he's giving his player the best. I mean, I remember he's on the leading end of treating his players the way that you should treat your player. You know, I don't think you could find a player in the NBA that you say, I'm trading you to Dallas or something like that, and they, you know, they wouldn't be bummed about it. They'd be pretty, you know, they're pretty happy. They like, people like playing for them. And you see the results on the screen. You know what I'm saying? You got the ring.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I like him as a dude. He's spirited because he's not just an owner. He's not in it for the bottom line. And that's what Perot seems to be, you know, that's his debate. He's not in it for the bottom line. He's a fan as well for the game as well as an owner. You know what I'm saying? So being that, you want to see your team win. You have a lot of these owners like the Clippers who only wants to see the numbers come back.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? He don't really care. You know, we'll make a couple moves here and there. And when I want to see some numbers, I'll cut salaries. You know what I'm saying? I get it all down, and I get these players out of here, and we'll just have the numbers. But I don't really care whether we win or lose, and it shows. You know, who's a Clippers fan? You know what I'm saying? You know?
It's hard to find them out there.
So, really, I mean, everybody – Q did his thing, and he's showing you that the means justify the end. The end justified the means, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Arthur Blank took a big cue from him with the way he reorganized Flowery Branch out there, man.
Right, right.
That's a Mark Cuban move all day. Flat screens everywhere, man. Damn video shoot style. Barzy, your take on Cuban?
I think Gordon hit the nail on the head, man. He's a fan and an owner, man. I got no problem with any owner who spend the money to make the team better, man. Whether it's Steinbrenner, whether it's Cuban, whether it's Arthur Blank, I'm a fan of any owner, man. If you're a fan of a team who's got an owner like that, man, you love him because you know every year he's gonna do what it takes so that team can be competitive. And as a fan, you gotta love that, man. Ain't no bottom line slashing. We keep a payroll at this, and we gonna scrimp here, scrimp there. You know, get out of here, man. At the end of the day, man, you want to put the best product out there on the court or on the field. And if the owner does that every year, man, as a fan, you got to love that.
Yeah, man, because if I'm a fan, why the hell should I go all in if you ain't going to go all in?
Exactly.
I mean, owning a team is like a car, man. And certain people, they'll say, oh, I can get this kind of car because I can afford that payment. But if something happens where the car breaks down, next thing you know, the repo man is there. So when you got a guy like Mark Cuban, he can actually afford a sports team, meaning that's not – if things don't go right, he ain't going to be real nervous looking at things like, damn, I don't know about my finances. He can afford a team. But some of these other owners
– the money should come back, you know what I'm saying, all the money that he's putting in. When you win a championship, you're always going to see a boost in apparel. Sales are going to go up. You know what I'm saying? Dirk Nowitzki jerseys are going to go off the rack. I mean, shoot, I saw during the finals. They, you know, I don't know if they were selling them in Dallas, but, you know, you can look in the background. People had the Dirk fadeaway shirt, you know what I'm saying? I was like, damn, that's pretty cool, you know what I'm saying? Kind of wanted one myself. But ticket sales, I'm pretty sure all next season they're going to be sold out. You know what I'm saying? The money, it's going to come back. And like I said, the guy is just in it as a minority owner or whatever. You can't personally, and I mean, and maybe just because I don't have this kind of money, so I just don't know. I personally wouldn't look at owning a franchise to be that type of investment. Yes, it's gonna generate money. You know, it's gonna bring back some cheese. It's gonna bring it back fairly quickly. But I don't know if I would be looking. If I had that kind of money, you put something in that because that's what you love. You know what I'm saying? You don't really go in on something that you just don't know about. You just, okay, I just throw you a couple of dollars, and I'm expecting to get that money back. You can do that in the stock market. You know what I'm saying? You can do that in some real estate. You can do that in other avenues, man. And I don't think that the professional ranks, professional on the professional team is where you should be looking to see where you generate a profit.
Yeah. I always thought that was weird that so many teams do it, man. And now it's getting to the point where you got so many teams trying to make sure everybody is kind of sharing out the pot as far as some of these small markets. I mean, at some point, we're going to have to look into making these semi-leagues a little more important. Because some of these cities, they cannot – just the way the finances have changed, they cannot support a professional team. And, I mean, I would use Buffalo as a prime example. It's good that they're soldiering on, fighting, trying to do it. But I don't know if it's realistic to say that they can really support football there. In the old model, yeah. But in this new model, I don't know. I mean, how are you going to bully people in Buffalo for a new stadium every 5 to 10 years or 7 to 10 years? I just don't see it. But I don't know. We got a lot to get into, though, man. NBA draft-wise, I wanted to hear who you guys are high on, man. I don't know if I should list the guys who are going to be in the green room or just go by what you guys already know. Like, who are you high on and who are you kind of suspicious of as far as this draft? Right now they're showing that Beasley guy over in Europe who was dunking on everybody over there, I guess. But who are you high on and who are you kind of suspect of? Barzy?
I'm kind of high on Shock G, man, a.k.a. Derek Williams, man. He to me, man, in that tournament, man, he proved – to me, he kind of stepped out there and said, you know, showed that, hey, I'm a prime time player, man. I'm not afraid of the big stage. There's a lot of stuff to his game, man. He can shoot the outside shot. He can handle a little. He's explosive. I'd say it out of anybody in the draft, man. I would be high on that kid. I don't know too much about the European cats, man. And plus, you know, it's a long way from Europe over this physical style of play that they play in the NBA, man. So, you know, you can talk about this cat dunking on everybody and whatnot in Europe, but man, yeah, how many games he's gonna be doing that on NBA players? I don't know about that. But yeah, that Vesely kid, I've heard people say good stuff about him. I know Fran Fraschilla was real high on him, man, talking about he might be when it's all said and done, the best player out of this draft.
Said that about a number of those guys, though.
Mm-hmm. And, he seemed to know a lot about foreign players, though, man, so I'll let him have it on that. Alec Burke out of Colorado, another kid I'm high on, man. I like that kid out of Colorado, man. Another kid, I think, who could be a steal in this draft, man. But other than that, man, it's like Gordon said before, man, it's kind of iffy, man. You can be looking for a lot of guys who can give you some upside and, you know, hope for the best that they develop into a player at the next level.
I think the fact that if you took those Carolina front line and put them into this draft, it knocks damn near everybody down the board a spot. And I think that says a lot about this draft. But Gordon, let me get your guys you high on.
Man, right now, I mean, like I said, I'm kind of lukewarm on everybody. I want Kyrie Irving to be the guy that everybody's saying he is, but I don't see the book of work. I mean, yeah, he was killing some cats when he played, but dude only played like 11 games. You know what I'm saying? So actually 10 and a half, really. So I can't really say. I can't be too high. I tried to watch some of the little they had little camps going on like last week and the weekend and stuff like that. They were showing on NBA. And I'll tell you one guy that kind of made me kind of look at him was like, oh, boy, from Turkey, Enes Kanter. You know, he was supposed to, I know he was supposed to go to Kentucky, but, you know, they said because you played professional ball over in Turkey that you could, that he couldn't play for old Calipari. But I figured if he would play for Calipari, he, you know, probably a pretty decent ball player, you know what I'm saying? And he's talking cash out there, too. Like, if I had to play in Kentucky, we'd have won it all, no problem. You know, but the size, he got the size, you know, he had the bulk. I seen, you know, he fluid with his motion. So, I mean, he's somebody that want to see. I want to kind of follow him and see where he goes from here. Another dude that kind of I want to watch him. I think he could be a Scottie Pippen kind of player is Kawhi Leonard from San Diego State.
Yeah.
You know, I've been hearing all kind of stuff about it. Been working on his jump shot. He put on a little show in one of the little workouts or whatever, because that's been one of the big questions about dude was, you know, he's long, athletic. You know, everybody's pretty much looking at him to be like a wing defender type kind of guy. And he was like, when scouts were showing up, he was working out, shooting around like, hey, I got this jumper down, you know, trying to show everybody what he can do. And so I want to kind of chart him. If the right team, he can't get in the right team, man. He can make some noise. But like you were talking about, I'm suspect on Derrick Williams, man. I mean, I don't know. Is he a three? Is he a four? Can he play the three consistently? I mean, I saw some, they had a little stuff on Sports Science or whatever, him shooting. He hit 9 out of 10 three-pointers or whatever. And that's all good, but can you do it with a hand in your face? You know, can you do it? Can you do it when you're dead tired and the game's on the line or whatever? You know, can you do it for 82 games on top of all that? So, you know, I'm kind of suspect on dude. I like his talent now. Talent-wise, he's off the chart. You know, he's long, athletic. I like his attitude. He's telling everybody who will listen he should be the first pick, you know, and I like that confidence. You know, some guys would play it in the back like, you know, whoever the team pick, whatever. The dude's putting it out there. He letting it be known. Look, I'm the top player in this draft, and he may very well be. You know, but like I said, I like the rumors of Verdet going to the Knicks if that's where he lands. If he doesn't get it in the right system, then I think he'll be Adam Morrison all over again. But he has to land to a team like the Knicks, maybe a Golden State or somewhere. Something like that, where he can play fast pace, he can take those shots, and coach won't get too mad at him. But sure, so I mean, I'm just looking at this draft as this is a draft where your team gets deeper, not necessarily better. You know what I'm saying? Where you can get deep on your bench, not necessarily you're gonna pick this guy so he can turn your franchise around. That's why I don't understand why Cleveland is so high on. You know, we got 1 and 4. Yeah, but you know, it's a weak 1 and 4.
Yep. So, I mean, they stuck with the idea of do we draft the guys we like the best or do we go boom or bust with these two picks? They're in a real tough situation, man, for having the number one pick just because so much is riding on it as far as just everybody, what they think of Cleveland. Because if it doesn't work out, same old Cleveland. People are going to ride on them. So they got a tough choice to make. And looking at everything, what you said about Williams, I feel the same way. I'm worried about the handle. I feel like he's athletic enough to make plays, though, to where he'll at least be a difference maker in that sense. But not having that handle, that takes away that versatility. So that's what I'm kind of suspect about with him.
Well, he's got good enough. I mean, I watched him in the tournament, man. He's got decent enough handle for a dude his side, man. I mean, and, you know, that thing about, you know, as far as being on the stage and performing, man, this
he
guy did
that.
It, man. You know what I'm saying? He did it. That goes a long way with me, man, as far as you did something when it counted. You know, Kyrie Irving, I saw him play in the McDonald's All-American game, man. You know, I saw him play a little bit at Duke early in the season. And I saw him play in the tournament. He got great quickness, man. I think he'll be all right in the league, man. But you know, for the number one overall pick, man, when you think about where, you know, if you're drafting a point guard that high, what that point guard should be or what you expect, I don't know if he could live up to that, man. I think
but see, that's the thing. Does his shooting make up for the fact that he's not one of those freaks like Wall or Rose?
It doesn't.
That's the question.
I mean,
I think Gordon brought up a name I ain't heard in years last week that I think fits him to a T, except he's a little quicker, and that's Terrell Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
Shooter, played in the system, knows basketball real well. That's really who he reminds me of, a quicker Terrell Brandon.
And my
thing you got to say he played at Duke, so he played with excellent spacing because they got shooters,
exactly.
So he had a lot of room to work.
I just want to know if he that much better than Brandon Knight. I mean, I know it's kind of both of these guys are. Because I looked at Brandon Knight. Brandon Knight is a nice player. You know what I'm saying? He got some holes in his game. But, you know, being a 19-year-old kid, you know, you're going to have that. You're going to have to grow into it. And I just don't think that, you know, people are just locking Kyrie Irving in as, like, the best point guard in this draft. And I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, doing something goes a long way. I mean, if Kimball was an inch or two taller, you know what I'm saying, he couldn't be denied, really.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I think he might be – Kimball might be able to come up and do something in the league. But I just don't see him being far and away, leaps and bounds, better than everybody else. Like, it's a lock. I'm the number one pick. Wrap it up. Like you said, if those guys came out from UNC, they would move everybody down, probably four or five picks. If all of them that came out, you know what I'm saying? Like, if everybody came out, it would have moved everybody out the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like I said, I'm just not sold out. I'm going to watch the draft. I'm following the draft, you know what I'm saying? But I'm just not sold and thrilled like in years past.
Yeah, but I think these are the good drafts because, like you said, though, you get your role players and you kind of can evaluate GMs a lot, too. My player for this draft is Kenneth Faried, just because I think that's the only guy who you know what you're getting. He's a power forward. He's going to play defense and rebound. And he's going to dunk because he's athletic as hell. You know what he can do. You know his limitations. If you're a team that's already pretty well put together, he'd be a good pick, you know, in the late 20s or whatever. But everybody else, man, like you said, there's so many question marks. And then when you go with Jimmer, like the idea of him going to New York, we don't know if D'Antoni's going to be there. And if he's not, that takes a lot of his value away. If he can't play in a run-and-gun system,
yeah, I was just throwing Jimmer out there. It's like that perfect – you have one of those players that has to be a perfect case scenario, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And I was saying New York because that's been the rumors, but just assuming that D'Antoni would still be there and assuming they're still running that system, you know, so he come off the bench, play behind Chauncey. Or whoever else. I mean, I'm sure they might try to get younger too. So, yeah, just assuming that all things being in place as it is, right, as it stands right now, and you adding him.
Yeah, and the cancer kid you brought up, I done talked about this a gang of times on the show. I watched him in that World Championships, man. That dude killed Perry Jones and Jared Sullinger. So that's my only real time seeing him. So from what I seen, he was good. He gave them boys a good 25-15. But, you know, that's a glorified all-star game.
Did Skeen stay in this draft, man?
From VCU?
Yeah.
I believe so.
Nah, I think so, too.
Man, I like that kid, what I saw in the tournament, too, man. I mean, for a dude his size, man.
Yeah.
I mean, shooting the ball. I didn't hear too much about him and it going anywhere in anybody's mock, man. But to me, that he seemed like that somebody that, you know, they could take a flyer on in the second round, man. I like what I saw of him in the tournament.
Yeah. I mean, this is the draft to get creative. This is the draft to try to get a couple of guys, see if some of them can crack the rotation, and you end up paying rookie salaries instead of, you know, reeing up somebody else who's going to be overpaid. So, I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with somebody trying to get multiple picks in this draft just because of that.
Lakers got 4 second-round picks, man. But I heard your boy from your neck of the woods, man, is rising up the boards, man.
Talking about Shumpert, because everybody's evaluating him at the two. They finally, people saying, look, you ain't a one, man. You got to play the two. And
I'll get ready to
people
say.
Are liking him. I don't like him much, but, yeah, you know.
I didn't see
and
him. Go ahead.
Nothing. I was just going to say, from what I've seen on him, he would have to be the two because as a point guard, his IQ run is not there. I mean, I watched Tech games like, for real? Who thought about putting you at the point guard? Paul Hewitt should have been fired. But that's a lawsuit, dog. Because you have no interest in getting anybody else involved.
He owes Ghani Lawal some money, man, for real.
Really? Derek Favors got drafted just because everybody already knew what dude could do.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Because he couldn't show it at Tech. He couldn't show what he could do.
Yeah.
So, he's another guy. I've been hearing his name. Every time I hear this guy's name, I've been scratching my head like, okay. I mean, and even the UGA guys, I'm the same way with Leslie. Leslie is a hell of an athlete. You know, I just, once again, will he be J.R. Smith? Is that what we're going to compare him to?
Yeah, sure.
You know?
But he ain't explosive like J.R. Smith shooting-wise, but athletically, I look at him like Shannon Brown. If he goes to a good team, he can come in and make a difference for you. But if he's on an average or a bad team, he'd probably move around the league a lot. But that dude, man, that dude's a next-level athlete, but he just ain't a great ball player. And Trey Tompkins, I'm hearing people talk about his post-game. Like, what post-game? When I seen him, this dude was shooting threes and
that's what he
stayed away from his block.
That's his game. I think he'll be a steal. You know, somebody pick him up late second, around the second round. But I personally think he'll be a steal. Dude has a good game. I just think he needs a coach that's going to get in his head and motivate him a little bit. You know what I'm saying? And when you're the best player, it's kind of funny because a lot of time, most of the time in your life, people just let you do what you want to do. And I think he's been doing it all his life, and now you're going to have to – you're at a place where you need to be showing somebody something. You know, because you really hear that's kind of a knock on him. It's like he's kind of lazy.
Yeah, I don't think that triangle was good for him either, man, just the fact that he was out in space so much. When if that dude's at 6'10", 2, whatever he was, if he'd have stayed on the block, man, he'd have dominated the SEC last year. But I don't know, man. He's still a player, and like you said, if he goes to the right team, he probably will make a big deal. Like, if he goes to Boston or one of these already established veteran teams, I can really see good things for him, man. Just not the same player, but kind of in the mode of how Big Baby's career went. Because, you know, he's an undersized guy who people weren't high on, but he went to a great team. And now people's idea of Big Baby totally different from draft day. Draft day, nobody wanted him.
Yeah, but good reason, man.
True.
Dude was like 6'8", man. I mean, I think, what was he, listening to school at 6'8"?
Yeah, he's about 6'6".
Yeah, man, he couldn't, and he didn't have the lift. I mean, he's a good role player, man. He just got with the right squad. When Garnett got in there, man, he made everybody work harder, play harder on defense, man. And, you know, he came to pan out for him, man. He's a good little role player, man.
Yeah. Last week, the other thing we missed too, man, Mike Tyson was inducted into the Hall of Fame, along with Julio Cesar Chavez. The other guys are guys I don't know, so I'm not going to act like I do. But let me play this little clip of Mike, man.
Well, man, because we talked a little bit about money and about I'm going to be, but we wanted to be great fighters. But that's,
yeah, he kind of stalled out after that, man. He kind of got a little emotional. But, you know, shout out to the great Mike Tyson, man. Hall of Famer, man, with all that dude's been through. Got to at least say a few words about Mike, man. Y'all thoughts, Mike Tyson, Hall of Famer?
I think he deserved it, man. I mean, yeah. It's kind of hard to say, this, you know, set a parameter on Hall of Fame for boxing, because you have so many different types of boxers, so many different things happening throughout different guys' careers, you know what I'm saying? A whole lot of stuff. So you have to kind of take the good with the bad. And I just wish with Mike Tyson we could have saw that young bull that we saw coming out a lot longer. You know what I'm saying? He had he not got infected by Don King and the people that Don King surrounded him with, you know what I'm saying? That I wish we could have saw that cat go, you know, for a number of years. I wish I could have saw that guy fight Holyfield instead of the joke that we saw nibbling on ears and shit. You know what I'm saying? I wish we could have saw some, because a lot of fights would have been better. I wish he could have fought Lennox Lewis. You know what I'm saying? But to do what he did at such a young age, and the fear that his name, just bringing up his name around boxers, you could see their facial expression change. You know, you can't discount that. I've never seen anybody have that effect on their peers. Almost, and I throw out the golf reference, almost like the way Tiger Woods would do when he first hit the scene in golf. You know, when Tiger first hit the scene, it was like, damn, Tiger here? Oh, man, I got to get right. You know what I'm saying? You just know your whole attitude changed. When you say Mike Tyson stepped into the arena, it was, fear. You literally could feel fear coming off of guys. So, yeah, I mean, Hall of Fame all the way. I just wish we could have saw that dude the whole career, or at least a little bit longer. But maybe I'm just selfish with that.
Yeah, no, that's real sentiment right there, man. I would have liked to see that more, man. He's like people say Shaq wasted a lot of his talent. Mike wasted twice as much as Shaq did.
True.
When you really look at it. But yeah, Barzy, your thoughts on Mike, Hall of Famer?
I can't too much disagree with anything Gordon said, but yeah, just on sheer popularity that he brought to the boxing game,
yeah,
and you know, the kind of boxer he was early on in his career, yeah, he's definitely a Hall of Famer, man. Isn't he still the youngest heavyweight champion?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So yeah, man, definitely he had to be put in the Hall of Fame, man. I think Sylvester Stallone made it too, right, for Rocky.
That's what I was just getting ready to say, my God.
Yeah. And that goes to what you just said as far as generating interest and money for boxing. They felt like Rocky was that big. And I don't know if I could argue with him, man, when you consider the Ray Leonards and Haglers and all that stuff we seen in the 80s, man, how that stuff was ratcheted up.
I'll say this.
Yeah, let me get y'all.
I never looked at it from that angle about it generating, bringing the public to boxing, or you know, drawing viewers. But I can't remember the guy's name. I don't know if it was on, but it was a reporter who basically, when it came out, was saying that if you put Rocky in there, you got to put what's my boy,
Apollo.
Apollo Creed in. You got to put Apollo Creed in. Because if we're talking about boxing, you know what I'm saying, if you really technically you're talking about boxing, because when they first fought, Apollo Creed was like 46-0. You know what I'm saying? Killing cats. Supposedly, until he ran up on Rocky and they had those bouts with Rocky, and then ultimately his little demise with the Russian. You know what I'm saying? But maybe I'm just looking too deep into it. But
yeah, you got to put Clubber Lang in there, too?
Nah, you ain't going to put Clubber Lang in.
Nah, I don't know, man. I seen that argument going back and forth on Twitter, man. I mean, I don't know. That's a tough one. Just because, I mean, if you're putting Rocky in there, you are trying to you're throwing a lot of fiction into the game as it is. So if you're doing that, why not Apollo Creed? So I can understand people saying.
Personally, I mean, I just think I really do think it's ridiculous that you would put a fictitious character into a Hall of Fame, though.
Yeah, okay. It's ridiculous that there's a Rocky statue and no Bernard Hopkins or Smoking Joe Frazier statue in Philly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the color had a little something to do with that too.
And B-Hop being B-Hop.
Yeah, yeah. But like I said, Smoking Joe, man, you got a real hero right there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? In boxing, like I said, I say that with a grain of salt. I mean, Lennox Lewis kind of went out on top. But I was like, there really is no happy ending in boxing. You know, no boxer knows. It's almost like the dope game. Everybody thinks you can get out before the fans come. No, you're going to get knocked out eventually. You know, then you keep fighting, you know. You're going to get knocked out. Somebody going to call your number.
It's like The Wire. What your man Avon say? How you going to be on time? How you going to be perfect every time?
You know what I'm saying? Like I said, Lennox Lewis probably did it the best, you know, just going out. But I say his route was planned carefully. You know, a lot of big fights didn't come until people had passed prime.
Yeah.
The quote Riddick Bowe, he got his championship out of the garbage can.
Yeah.
But he did go out on his own terms. But in boxing, man, like I said, you got to take the good with the bad. And happy for the boy Mike. Rocky's a joke. Like I said, going back to it, though, yeah, you should have Joe Frazier somewhere, you know, whether it's on his side of town, you know what I'm saying, whatever side of Philly he's from, put him, show that dude some love, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Smoking Joe, all-time great, man. He deserves it, man. Switching up, man, I wanted to ask y'all just a regular sports dude question, man. What three athletes, man, would you want to chop it up with, man? Sit back, have dinner, however you do it, man. Throw some steaks on the grill or, you know what I mean, fry some fish. However you do it at the crib, what three athletes, man, any era, man, would you want to have dinner with, man? Sit back, ask them about some things, man.
That's a good one.
If y'all want to think about it, let me go. I'll go.
Go ahead, yeah.
All right. Because I'm going Ali, Jackie Robinson, and not MJ, because I really don't want to hear about MJ talking about MJ. I'm going Larry Bird, man, just because he talk a lot of shit. I'd like to talk to those three, man.
Okay, I feel you, but I disagree on the MJ. I take MJ because the things that I've heard about him off the court, I mean, I don't think dude is that big of a jerk, you know what I'm saying? I just don't see him being that. And I know the way he was running through chicks, he got some stories to tell.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I'm saying?
He'll get some good stories out of Mike.
And so I'm looking at it like that. I take MJ. Should I take Babe Ruth? You know what I'm saying? Some stories I like to hear. If I'm talking to some dudes, I want to hear, you know, what's going on. And Ali. I go with you on the Ali thing, too. You know what I'm saying? So I guess that's my three, Babe Ruth, MJ, and Muhammad.
Okay. Bargy, where you at, man? Hey, man, don't say Urban Meyer, man.
Man, get the fuck. Yeah, come on, man. He's an athlete, dog. Oh, man, that's a tough one, man. I say
Bo.
Nah, man, come on, yo. I say Bo Jackson, man.
Oh, that's a good one.
I say Jim Brown. You know what,
really?
Man? I was watching something. You know, real reason I say that, man, I would ask that dude, man, if he really did nail Raquel Welch back in the that'd be the first question I asked him, man. Cause I was watching a little Western man the other day, and
yeah.
He was in there with Raquel Welch. God dang, man, man, I had no idea she was that bad back in the day. But damn, if he hit that shit, more power to him, man. But yeah, I put Jim Brown on it just because I want to ask him that question, man. Third one, man. Ooh.
You got a good
third one, man. I can't really put a finger on the third one, man. I'm trying to think, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you want to come back to it later, that'll work, man. And the reason I said Jackie, man, I want to throw this out, man. This is just a story I just found out about recently. Back in the day, Jackie started a program with Harry Belafonte where they were going to Africa and bringing students back here to learn. And then they would go back home, but they would take care of the housing, the school, everything for them. And one of the students that they brought over was from Kenya, a man named Barack Obama.
The hell out.
So, I'm dead serious. Harry Belafonte. Harry Belafonte and Jackie Robinson had a program bringing over students, and one of those students was Barack Obama. His father.
I thought he was born in the States, man.
No, the father of the president. Not this Barack. Barack Obama, Big Barack.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I was going to say, wait a minute now, damn it.
No, his father.
Like, shit, man, was that dude even... Was he old enough to be brought over here?
No. His father.
Okay,
his
I'm with you.
His father came
over
and got
now.
His education through
okay,
Jackie Robinson and Harry Belafonte. It's just weird how life works out like that, man.
Yeah,
but
really.
You start something like that, you'd never think that one of the guy's kids would actually go on to be the first black president. Of it. Either way, man.
Yeah,
either way, interesting thing with that.
That's a good interesting fact, man. You know, I didn't even, you know, learn something new every day.
Hey, man, that boy Harry Belafonte is that dude, man. If you find any Harry Belafonte interviews, check them out, man. Dude is serious.
Man, they, all them cats back in the day, Dick Gregory, Harry Belafonte, they all had shit popping, man.
Yeah.
But you actually stood for something there.
Yeah.
You know, you get guys now who don't stand for anything. You just try... Other than money, other than a dollar, you know, guys won't speak up about nothing. You know, you barely get these guys to speak up for themselves, you know, to represent their team.
Right.
You know what, though? I'm gonna be fair with today's modern athlete because I say the money they make is so much greater, man. They're not really, you know, you look back at the plight that those guys say, even though they were athletes, you know, like what's my man from the Celtics, man?
Bill Russell.
You know what I mean? Even though he was an athlete playing for Boston, representing the city of Boston, he still got hatred. You know, he still felt some of the same things that plagued, you know, your average black person around that time. So
man,
said,
on
you know,
NBA TV, that man said he came home and somebody had shit in his bed.
Defecated in the man's bed, put all kind of – this is a dude who played – win championships for the city of Boston, and they treat the man like that. So I could understand it was more. I'm not gonna say easier, but you know we were all in it together, so to speak, more than you know, so to speak, back in that time. Now you look at it, man. We separated. You got money. You're more in elite status. You don't face some of the same kind of stuff that you know maybe your guy trying to work this 9-to-5 is going through. You know we're separated. You know what I mean? So. I know sometimes they have other, you know, those type of athletes when they reach that certain type of level of fame and notoriety and getting all that kind of money, man, they separated from us, man. They don't really face that, you know, that day-to-day struggle like how, you know, everybody was facing back in those days, man.
Those guys came from united communities. Everybody now comes from households. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's pretty much get yours. So yeah.
I mean, when the money dries, though. You get your, I quote Paul Mooney, you'll get your nigga wake up call. You know what I'm saying? You know, when it start going bad, when it start turning, look at OJ. They got OJ for trying to get his stuff back, dog. You know what I'm saying?
They ain't gonna get Oprah, though.
You know what I'm saying? But they probably won't get Oprah. I mean, shoot, I go back to, coming back to the NBA, look at AI going through it right now.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And he was the face of the league for a long time.
Big,
you know what I'm saying? And
wow.
You know, so he getting his wake up call. He was so above and beyond anything. Nobody could even people can't even fathom. I can't even fathom the stardom that this dude had. You know, I knew chicks. You know, in college, whatever. They know a damn thing about basketball, but they had AI posters on the wall.
Yeah, man. It was iconic, man, because he fit that shift right when everything was changing as far as how young people who listened to hip-hop looked and how the rest of America looked.
Because
you remember, they weren't happy about it, man. People, what, they airbrush out tattoos and all kinds of other stuff to try to clean them up.
Yeah, but he did it his way, though. You know what I mean?
True.
You know, you say, you know, guys come in and they're a certain way.
And that's why
he
has a problem
right
now.
They change it up corporate. He stayed true to who he was, man. He stayed true to his, where he was from. He did it all the way through. And
the
like
good
said,
and
they,
the bad of it.
He did that to maybe his detriment, but he did it his way.
Yeah, like I said, maybe to his detriment.
You brought up that OJ thing, man. I kind of want to just put this to bed, man, just to put it out there. I don't know if there are many people of a different persuasion who listen to this show, white folks. I want to say this, man. Black people do not care about O.J. Simpson. They did not care about O.J. Simpson when the trial went down. Black people cared about unjust sentencing as far as laws and the court system. That's what people cared about. So when they seen this man get off, all it was basically a middle finger towards our system of law saying, it doesn't work. Y'all got jerked around like we get jerked around every day. That's all it was. Because afterwards, you didn't see this big love for O.J. It was all about just that ruling and people having a chance to kind of poke their chest out that next day and talk about it. But it was more taunting than anything else. Because folks don't – man, the people, especially people my age, we didn't see O.J. play.
Yeah.
Hell, we just know that dude from commercials and the movies.
Yeah, I know Naked Gun, shoot.
Yeah, that too.
Hurts commercial, hopping through the airport.
Yeah, jumping off suitcases and shit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody know that dude.
Yeah, man, but I'll say this too, man. To me, though, you know, coming up, high school during all that, when that was going on, man, I'm still surprised at how devastating it was to look at the reactions of white people during that time, man, and how hard they took it.
And they still hold on to that grudge to this day.
Exactly, man. You have people on there didn't even know that Nicole Simpson, but they were crying because he got off.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand that, man. I mean, there's been lots of things that's happened that, you'd be like, man, that's some bullshit. But, you move on. I ain't never, if it wasn't my if they weren't personally related to me or, I didn't have any personal, effects from it, hell, man, you wouldn't see me on TV crying about it. You saw
that's
that
big lie in America. People put up that front like they don't care or not concerned with race, and then people use it to drive up their emotion, and you see that they care about it a lot.
Dude, it's funny that you mentioned that. I had a teacher. We watched, like I said, I was in high school. We were watching it as it was going down. And my teacher literally, when they hit that not guilty, literally stormed out of the room, bursting in tears like, I can't believe it. We were like, everybody like, God, dog, whatever. You know, so we like, damn, is it that serious? And she was in tears. She was serious, bro. Everybody else was like, damn. What's going on? We cheering, and she got this mom like about to kill herself down there.
I was happy that he got off and whatever, man. Some people say he didn't do it, how he killed two people, man. Nobody hears scream, shout, where'd all the blood go, what have you. But taking that all out of the equation, man. He got off, man. We were rejoicing because whatever, man, somebody got over on the system, like Grant said, man. But at the end of the day, shit, OJ in jail now, you see me shook up about that shit?
Exactly. You know, that's what I mean. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, man, people don't care about OJ like that. I'm not acting like I can speak for the black community, but I'm just judging it based off of the sentiment, man. You don't see that kind of... I just know it ain't a lot of people writing OJ right now. Let me put it like that.
Well, it was just because, I guess, at that time, and I heard old cats talking about O.J., and an old dude to tell you back in the day, he ain't been black since he hit USC, you know what I'm saying? So we couldn't feel no kind of way for O.J., really, because they took O.J. and they isolated him from the blacks, you know what I'm saying, from black players. It was something going on. I think it was the old NFL player was like, they went into, whether it was a workout or something like that, and O.J. was in there, and it was like, basically black people had to sit on this side, and one of the white dudes was like, oh, but you cool, O.J., come over here with us. You know what I'm saying? It was like that. So it was known, and it was known that he was their guy.
Everybody had, for lack of a better term, I call him a token, but that was him.
That was him all day. And if you look up the great Ralph Wiley, look up some of his accounts of it, because he was around during the time and actually had a little beef with O.J. when they were working together as far as the media. But he said it. He said they didn't take O.J. O.J. went over there because that's who he preferred to be around, and that was his lifestyle. He said that super law team that O.J. had, O.J. couldn't afford that. Those were the people who liked O.J. and who were friends with him, who took care of it for him. So, yeah, it is what it is, man. But let's leave the juice alone. hopefully the dude make it out alive, though. I will say that, though. I don't want to see the dude die in jail, regardless of what I think about him. And y'all know that gives me a chance to bring up the black-white thing again, man. Have y'all thought about it at all? I just want to ask that.
Look, man.
The question last week was, are blacks better athletes than whites overall? I said no. I'm saying everybody's the same. Hell, we in America. All men are created equal. Ain't that part of this whole American experience?
At the time when that was written, you were, what, one-third a man?
Three-fifths of a human being.
Three-fifths, you know what I'm saying? So what I'm saying? All men are created equal except you, Negro.
Like I was trying to explain it to you last week, man, because we see so many more black athletes that are better, man, we tend to believe that. But I'm telling you, man, there is white cats who are, you know, have that kind of athletic ability, man, and, you know, can't do, but there's so many few of them that you can see that can compete, you know, with the majority of the black athletes out there, man. But they do exist. So if you go based on that fact, yes, they are equal. But there's more black athletes out there that are elite skilled more so than white people. So that's why we tend to believe that, man. But I'm telling
you, so Barnes has changed his mind on the subject. Yeah.
No, I didn't change my mind, man. I said this last week.
I didn't know if you were sure with it last week, though. Okay.
No, I said this last week, man. But it was, to me, it was kind of hard to get my convey my point, man. Because we see so many more black athletes that are elite, man. We believe that, man. But they are out there. And if you just look at that, you would say yes. And I would say yes. They are better because we see more black athletes that are elite. Elite level, of an athlete. But they are white cats out there that have these type of skills. And my belief in this is, man, if you take a white kid, man, and he grows up around black kids and he plays with those black kids, you know, I'm talking from a youngster, like, you know, you play around those sports, you know, to me they will develop that way, man. I've seen it with a white kid that grew up with black. He had that kind of ability, man, where he wasn't a stiff white player, man. He could do some of the same things that, you know, some of the black kids I grew up with, he could do, man. So, I think when you face elite level competition and you grow up around that, your skills kind of hone into that. So I think it can be developed, man, but to me, there's more black athletes with that elite level talent than there are white people, man.
See, but
if you say that, though, but
week,
you're
though.
Still saying this.
But see, I said that was my point last week because you can only say there's so few or far between. And I knew a couple white dudes who were very athletic. You know what I'm saying? But because when you have to say that, though. I knew a white dude who, like, say, I know a couple black friends. I know a couple black guys. You know what I'm saying? When you have to throw that in there, that's saying something. You know what I'm saying? That's just saying, whether it's in our DNA, I don't know. I'm not arguing that point. Whether it can be, you know, honed in and, you know, can it be trained or whatever. But I'm just saying because when you see a white dude who can jump, or you see a white dude who can run or whatever, and you're like, damn, that's a fast-ass white dude. Whatever, you know, because when you have to say that, instead of just saying that's a fast guy,
I don't know, man. I still think the same thing. I think our perceptions play a big role in what we think as far as that goes, because no matter what, you're drawing from a much bigger pool with black athletes. The white pool is a lot smaller because they're not as many playing sports. But when you go over to Europe, where they're not being told or we're not seeing the idea that black athletes are better every day, you see a lot of them coming over to the NBA because they don't have that thing pushed into their head all day that they're not as fast or can't jump as high.
I think more of them pursue it. They got that hunger,
But I think the NBA more so stretched out and tried to get those guys. David Stern made his mission to make the NBA a worldwide game, and so he kind of influenced GMs to go over and take a look. And you saw a lot of times that when you went over, and we see it every day, we're going to see it tomorrow. You know, when you reach for a guy and you say he's the best thing smoking over in his part of the world, whatever country, town, whatever he's from, he might not pan out. We've seen countless of guys. For every one, for every dirt, there's, you know, Potapico, or, you know, it's all kind of guys. For every dirt there is, there's three or four guys that didn't make it. You know what I'm saying? That just didn't work. They looked, there were some bums. But
man, damn you, Gordon, man. You've been shooting holes in that perfectly set up argument I had for that.
But my thing is, okay, when the last time a white dude won the 100 in the Olympics? It's a worldwide sport.
Shit, they had a white dude who ran the anchor leg on a relay team. I can't remember that dude, man. But
talking about the guy with the goggles?
Yeah,
Dustin
man.
Dustin something?
Yeah, that man. You remember that? And I remember watching the Olympics. I was like, what the hell race was that? I was like, what race they running, man? They white boy
the damn racist Barzies.
Well, you know, man, that shit's unusual. It's just like when you saw Jason Sehorn playing fucking cornerback. Everybody was like, God dang, man, Jason, who's that kid playing? White boy playing cornerback? That's what made Jason Sehorn, that's what got him a lot
that's
of notoriety.
That's what made him fame.
That's what got him a lot of notoriety because you didn't see that type of shit. You don't see too many white cats running anchor legs on a relay team.
And we probably never see a number one cornerback on your team running the kickoff either.
Yeah, that's
the career of Jason Sehorn. Dumb shit. But yo, I don't know, man. I still believe what I believe. I have a hard time setting it up just because, like I said, our perception of what we see. But to take it to another level, though, you look at student achievement and you say, well, a lot of these kids from the suburbs have higher SAT scores than the kids from the inner city. And you say, why? Well, you go with the environment of it.
Yeah, it's exposure.
You have better studying, better tutors, better schools, and you end up as a better student. And I would say the same thing for athletics as far as the inner city as opposed to the suburbs. That's why I still believe that everything is equal all around. It's just based on the environment and how you're molded into it. And what kind of pool you're drawing from. If you're drawing from a small pool, you're going to have a small fraction of players playing professionally in any sport.
It also
goes to
the
big pool, you get a lot.
Like you said, exposure. If you know, the better competition you face, the better you will be, the better you will develop. You face that competition earlier. It's just like you watch these kids in baseball, AAU, or basketball, AAU. They get them against the best competition, man. And, you know, they travel around. That's how you hone your skills. That's how you become better, man. And, you know, you look at some of the white kids, man, you know, maybe they don't face that kind of talent that maybe you would get out of it, you know, coming from the inner city, you know.
No, they don't. And that's why Kevin Love is a good example. Because instead of getting out there and being worried about these guys, he's been playing against all these guys since he was 13.
Yeah.
So it's just go out there and try the ball.
But you are a little bit shocked that, you know, he developed into the type of player he was, that he is now, right?
But I think he is what he is. Other people think he's like this.
People were saying he was going to be a stiff-ass white dude coming into the NBA. I felt
he is.
Oh, come on, man. He's a player.
He's a stiff rebounder, pick-and-pop player. Great rebounder.
That
was a great shooting touch, but...
He's not athletic, though. You know what I'm getting ready to say?
And he ain't fluid
down
low. Yeah.
He's not explosive, but you can see he's holding his own. People expected him to get, you know, motherfuckers be dunking like Sean Bradley, just dunking on his ass, cuts on his back, knocking his ass to the floor. People were expecting him to come in NBA and get just manhandled like that.
No, but he always had that beef, though, man. He's got that body with that beef, but he gets a lot of shots blocked, too, because he's not athletic, like Gordon just said.
He's a below-the-rim guy. I mean, yeah, I give it to him. He can play. He can play, but his game is below the rim. I mean,
and if Miami could trade Chris Bosh for him, they'd do it in a second.
Yeah, I agree with that. But like I said, he's below the rim. He's a smart player as opposed to an athletic player.
Not the stereotype, Gordon.
Yeah, the buzzwords.
Did you call him a smart player?
The buzzwords.
Hey, he's that's what he is.
You call Jimmer deceptively quick.
But you know what? When you talk about, I kind of heard this story not too long ago about Jimmer's brother. Something happened to his brother, and his brother, I think his brother, like, tore his knee up, whatever it was. Somehow, his brother started taking him at a young age to, like, the prison, and he was hooping against the inmates. Somehow, I don't know how, you know, don't ask me the hows and the whys of how he can get in and hoop with the inmates and then decide to go home. But his brother somehow had it in. I don't know whether he worked at the jail or whatever, but he would let him play with the inmates. So some of that fear, like you said, some of that fear isn't there. Shoot, I can hoop against these dudes.
Right.
You boys ain't nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So
it
kind of gave me a little more respect for dude and his game. So, I mean, yeah, I agree with that. I do agree with the fact that your exposure to better talent will make you better. And that goes in any walk of life. Like you said, whether it's being a student or whether it's being an athlete, it goes in any walk of life. You surround yourself with greatness in that area, then it makes you step up, elevate your game in whatever it is.
Yeah, I agree, man. And back to how we got onto all this other race stuff, man. We were talking about players and just the fact that most of them are kind of, you know, they don't want to rock the boat. The reason why I picked Ali, man, shout out to that dude, man. During the Vietnam War, his infamous comments, I ain't got no quarrel with them. I ain't got no quarrel with the Viet Cong.
Viet Cong ain't never called me, nigga.
All day, man. Shout out to Ali for that, man. Just being a strong enough man to do something like that. And like I said, the picture for this show is Ali at his press conference with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Russell, Jim Brown, and a host of other black athletes who were there to support the man. I seriously doubt we'll see anybody doing anything like that nowadays, but shout out to them, man. And on the lighter things, can y'all explain this golf thing for me, man, and why this was so important? Where I've seen this everywhere. Y'all know I don't play golf, don't know ish about golf. I always go to the panel for these type of things, man.
My boy,
Rory McIlroy,
yeah. I mean, it, once again, it's what you're seeing now in golf is the fact that it's like I equated him to Mike Tyson earlier. It's kind of the same thing. Like, nobody really fears Tiger anymore. You know what I'm saying? So what's going on now is you're getting the – Rory McIlroy is a young dude, you know, and the Masters, I think he finished like – he came in second, you know. But he came in second only because he had like a little meltdown on the last day. He just had a little meltdown, kind of choked, and people were just like, oh, the young kid ain't ready yet. So this, the U.S. Open kind of showed that he can do it. You know what I'm saying? So what you're doing is you pumped a little life into golf where there was none, where everybody's still sitting around waiting for Tiger to get better. You're getting a surge of youth who doesn't care about Tiger, who's not afraid of Tiger, who actually grew up watching Tiger and aspire to beat him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Whenever he's ready, whenever he's back at his prime or whatever. So that's what's going on now. The golf game is grasping at anything that would keep that money going. Because when Tiger came, dollars exploded in golf.
Right.
So they're looking for anything, and the fact that he's white, oh my God, it helps. You know,
he's still not a he's still a European player.
Yeah, he's European.
Yeah, he, you know, as far as Americans, man, you know, they will follow, man, but they want to see an American white person, man. That's why Phil Mickelson, over that period of time when Tiger was dominant, people were still crying, oh, you know, Phil Mickelson, they wanted to challenge Tiger, and he didn't do shit. He never did shit, but this guy still made money on the tour. People were still talking about it. He wasn't even the Tiger's league, and people were still talking, forcing them down people's throats. I mean, they like to see American people look like themselves. To me, Tiger made golf cool, man.
Being fair to all Americans, though, everybody does.
Well, true. I mean, you want to see somebody where you're from, you know, be on that stage, you know, that type of, because, you know, you kind of look at yourself, you kind of look at that like looking in the mirror, man. You look at that like that being you, so to speak, man. They're, you know, from the same country where you're from. I'm sure the Europeans look at him winning over here, you know, Ireland. I think he's an Irish cat.
Yeah.
You know, they probably look at it and be like, yeah, you know, this, we want to see our countrymen win. Just like we do when you know, Americans go overseas and compete in events and tournaments. But to me, man, Tiger made golf cool, man. I don't know about you or what you guys remember golf being. I remember a lot of white guys playing golf, a lot of older dudes playing golf. When Tiger came in, man, you saw a lot of young cats wanting to play golf.
Yeah.
You saw, you know, the stuff, you know, even the way you dressed out on a golf course. Tiger made that kind of cool, man. He may not get the credit he deserves for that, but I remember growing up, I didn't give a damn about golf, man. And
exactly.
I remember the kind of dudes who played golf, like how I remember. They were like, you know, gray-haired white guys, man. That's
you
how
know
I
what?
Remember them.
I never thought about the apparel thing, but you did hit on the head, because when you said that, instantly I went back in my mind to when what you actually thought about a golfer when you were young. Like, you can look at old film, you see the plaid pants and the socks pulled all the way up and the goofy hat, you know, with the little poof ball on top. You know, you really look like a dummy. if you think about some of the outfits that was worn on the golf course. And to me, like, when I was growing up, like, everybody has, like, that one uncle who's kind of, like, hangs out with the white people or whatever. And I remember my one uncle said, look, if you want to succeed in the business world, you will play golf, because a lot of contracts, a lot of deals get done on the golf course. That's where these white guys feel comfortable. They're drinking beers. They're getting slammed driving around this country club, and they're just talking shit back and forth to each other. But they, you know, that's how they relate. That's their, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to, like their sports bar. That's where they kick it, you know? So they do a lot of deals there, that was his point to me, to play golf. But I really didn't take it serious, and I really couldn't at the time because I was so young. But until Tiger emerged, then I said, okay. And it drew the interest. It brought me in. But I don't play like I should. I got partners that play for real, and they'll call me all the time and like, yeah, let's go hit them up. And I'm like, you know, shoot, I'm doing so. I'll come up with an excuse sometimes almost. But I do play and I do watch to keep up with it. But you hit it on the head. I just thought about that when you said, you know, he made golf look cool, because he did. I mean, you rarely hear people say that in terms of Tiger. You hear about it changing the game, elevating money, you know, just the thing about it. And going back to Rory McIlroy, from what I heard, it was different. The people are gravitating to him simply because he was out there almost like, I don't know if you remember the movie with Adam Sandler when he was playing golf.
Gilmore.
Yeah. He was out there kind of like that. He was high-fiving little kids, you know what I'm saying? Whipping it up, you know, getting the crowd involved. Whereas Tiger, you better not flash a camera. You better not say anything. Tiger will have your ass looking from across the street. You know what I'm saying? If you make any kind of noise while he's around. So Rory McIlroy is kind of making it a little more personal, making it more of a sport, I guess you would say. At least I'll say that he did. It appears that's what he's doing. You know, I can't say that will be his
that would be him throughout his career. But it appears that right now that's what he's doing. He's, you know, kind of getting the crowd involved. You pay a lot of money for this stuff, man. You pay a lot of money to go to the Masters. You pay a lot of money to go to the U.S. Open, the British Open, and all these different venues. And most of the time,
you gotta give them some kind of entertainment. Shit.
You know, if you watch these, you watch golf. Like, the thing about it is, like, you can't just sit down and watch golf like you would sit down and watch basketball. Like, I'll have it on, but I'm doing something else. You know, I might be on the grill, or, you know, I'm out doing something else, playing with the kids or something. And every now and then you got to look up just to kind of, you know, look up, catch something, watch a little bit. You can't just sit there and go straight through because you'll be asleep. You know, the commentators, they all whispering and everything like that. Like I said, they don't want to get thrown out of there. So, you know, I mean, it's good when you get into it, man. You got to kind of, you ease your way into it. Don't go, you ain't got to go all the way in. But just kind of pick you somebody. And I said the same thing about racing. And somebody tried to get me, I had a couple guys try to get me into some NASCAR business. And they was like, well, pick you somebody and follow them. And that's what I would kind of advise you to do in golf. Pick you somebody that you might like, whether it's you like they swag or you hear good stuff about them or whatever. Pick you somebody and start watching their career. And eventually, you know, you'll branch off and say, I like that guy too, and you'll start picking up different stuff. So, I mean, it ain't as bad as you think.
Damn, you said NASCAR,
commentary from the panel. I mean, no. Keep in mind, I have no idea about NASCAR. I said some people tried to get me into NASCAR, and that was their logic, like just pick you somebody, follow somebody, and then go from there. But I just used that ideology to say, do that in golf.
I could never watch. I mean, I try to watch a little, you know, NASCAR, man, they shit on TV, man. You might tune in and be like, ah, let me see what. Man, that is the most boring thing. I guess if you're there in person, it may be different. But, God dang, watching that on the TV, man, just cars going around. I mean, around. The only exciting thing happened is somebody wrecked, and that's it.
Yeah,
I think that's probably what most of the people show up for, hoping to happen, somebody wrecked. But,
yeah,
man, that shit is boring, man. I don't know how anybody could sit and watch just NASCAR cars going around the track and be excited to watch that shit, man. Ugh.
Yeah, I couldn't do it, man. Respect to y'all, man. Throwing some golf knowledge out there, man. I don't know. I guess I had to wake up when Tiger come back and goes against that Rory cat, man. I watched the highlights.
Tiger done, though, man? What are y'all feelings about that? Is Tiger done? You think he's done?
He's done.
I don't think he's done, man.
So he's never going to win a tournament again.
I don't like Tiger.
Let me rephrase that.
This is just my hate coming out. That's all that is. That's not an informed opinion.
Yeah, I know how you don't like Tiger, man.
Right.
Man. You got some personal ish with Tiger, man. But, shit, man. I ain't got no beef with Tiger, man. Tiger is who he is, man. He like the white women, man. So be it. You know, I ain't hating him on that, man. You know, whatever. You know,
I'm not knocking him for that. I'm just knocking the man for who he is, man. Just not somebody
man,
I respect, man.
He's a little stiff, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The cobbling Asian and that nonsense, man. You black dude. People look at you like black. Hey, man, when he cheated on his wife, I bet you they said that was a nigga in him.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see a lot of people say that was a nigga in him. You know what I mean? So he was a nigga then, so.
Well, you know what? And it's funny that you say that, because the first thing that I started hearing about was, well, his dad used to run around and do something. Certain.
Oh, no. They didn't do it like that.
Yeah, man, I did hear that. That was one of the first things. So and kind of sideways, like you said, we call it, what you say, buzzwords, kind of. That's kind of indirectly saying, yep, that nigga in them got him.
Yeah, speaking of racist shit, your boy, who I talked about last week, as an example out of the blue, Matt Painter comes into the news. Coach of Purdue, former player at Purdue, he was talking about the whole pay-for-play thing. He basically said, I don't think we can just give these guys money. I mean, what are they going to do, go buy some new Timberlands?
What? He said that, man?
Matt Painter, coach of Purdue.
That dude who recruits black ball players say some shit like that?
Yes, sir.
Man, if that dude ever came, if I'm a parent of an inner city kid and he said some shit like that, man, he wouldn't even step foot in my house, man. Boy, somebody got to tell him that these kids that he's recruiting help him get that salary that he's got, help him get that contract that he's got.
Right, that contract he just stuck Purdue up for.
Even if he was being facetious, man, this something. I mean, come on, dude. You too much of a high-ranking guy to let some shit like that come out of your mouth, man.
It's not even that they help you get that. They got you that.
Yeah, you're right.
Ain't no help. They got you that. But if you didn't have those players that you have, you wouldn't have that contract. You wouldn't have that endorsement deal. You wouldn't have any of this. I mean, every now and again, man, a white dude will just let you know what they really think about you. Whether, you know, sometimes they'll come back, it'll be a slip of a tongue, or they'll get too comfortable or whatever. And then in today's world, somebody's going to find out, you know, no matter what you do, no matter what you say. Today's world, the world is too small now with Twitter, with, you know, camera phones, with, you know, whatever, everything that we have. Your true you will be shown. You'll be brought to the light eventually, you know, as much as you want to hide it. So, yeah,
not
I mean,
that,
it doesn't surprise me.
Not only that, Gordon, but shit, dude, him making a comment like that, you know he's referring to the black players. Are the only black players that play college basketball? Last time I checked, they interested in Timberlands? Man,
it's an ignorant comment from a dude who I would say doesn't have any integrity. And I'm gonna say this: for one, that comment is bad enough. But two, think about this: when he did that whole Missouri business this summer and sticking Purdue up for some extra money, he's an alum. This is where he went and played basketball. He stuck up the school he went to, school he grew up at. So I let you know, man, he's strictly about him.
About business.
Yeah, I'll tell you about a dude, morals, man.
About business, man. He about that
I'm
going to
stick
man.
Up my own school. I need a raise. I go to Missouri. I better put some money on the table, man. That's pretty much how it went down, man. Your boy Matt Painter out there. Damn, I had one more, man, but I lost the story. Oh, yeah. Four BCS commissioners paid $1 million apiece, and the highest one was old Delaney from the Big Ten at 1.6. That was in 2009. They just, Freedom of Information Act, they were able to get these guys' tax records. Delaney got 1.6. Football game. Y'all thoughts?
I mean, I'm surprised it's that low. To be honest with you, I mean,
but that's 1 year.
You know, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Though I'm surprised it's that low because these guys, when you think about the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, Pac 10, you know, you think about these players. These are just under $1 billion. I won't say $1 billion, but they make some power numbers. These schools make power numbers, and when you're the CEO of those things and you control the money, you see what old boy did with the Fiesta Bowl. You know what I'm saying? You saw the numbers there. I think it was like $4 million, some, you know, $4 or $5 million, somewhere in that range. So I'm just surprised at 1.6. That's highest. You know what I'm saying?
In addition to his salary and bonuses and everything else, and.
Yeah, but that don't even go into factor, Gordon, that, you know, how he may have traveled, took vacation, and things off of other
company
revenue.
Money.
Yeah, you know what I mean. He could use money to travel, vacation, or whatever on their dime. That's not reported as salary. I mean,
yeah.
So you look at his 1.6 being low. Who knows how much else he got that's
he
not reported as salary.
I mean, I just – for as much money that is generated in college football, I mean, it's a cash cow. I mean, so I don't know what his job would entail. I'm sure there aren't many jobs that would command that kind of money. You know what I'm saying? That – when you look at workload, there aren't many jobs that would command that kind of money.
I mean, but at the same time, some of that money should fall back and trickle down and should be into the players, get it reach some of these players. I think it's a shame that we basically still have somewhat slavery going on with college sports, college athletics. But that's opening up a whole new box, because how much do you got to get into how much to play this guy, and do you play the star the same you pay as much on the bench or whatever? But
yeah, I mean, ain't no use in us trying to work it out tonight, because you know we'll be here forever.
But they
got to do something, though, because every time things get slow, any story like this, some blogger, somebody at Sport News, ESPN, wherever, they're putting it up, man, because there's so much hypocrisy there. Why wouldn't you keep going to that well if you're a radio host or sports writer?
They should put it up, man, because there should be a light shown on this, man, because how many times we going to rake the kid over the coals, man, for getting a couple of $100 from some damn booster, and then we look at this kid as a scum of the earth. Well, you got these big cats out there, man. Like, what was going on with the BCS? Getting money hand over fist, taking vacations, taking family members, doing this on bold money. You know what I mean? God dang, man. Somebody need to shine a light on it, man.
I want a kid to, after he's been found out, let's just take Terrell Pryor, because Terrell Pryor is the newest, latest, hottest story or whatever. To say, I mean, because you get kids nowadays who try to paint the picture of poverty to you, like, I was trying to pay my mom's rent, whatever, whatever. I want somebody to be like, yeah, I was getting paid.
I'm an American.
You know what I'm saying?
When I work, I should get paid.
You know what I'm saying? Own it. I was getting paid, dude. I'm looking at Coach. Coach just signed a contract extension. You know what I'm saying? The assistants just got a bump in their money. Because they recruited me. You know what I mean? I look around at 100. I got 100,000 people in the stadium, and 50,000 of them are wearing number 2 jersey. Yes.
I ain't seen
it. If somebody's gonna put $1,000, give me a handshake, I'll take it and put it in my pocket and buy my Tims. I just want somebody to own it, man. You know, because what you try to do, you try to
justify.
You try to go throw it out there. Oh, well, I came from this, and I came from this ghetto. I came from this hood, and I ain't had nothing. I got six brothers and sisters, or whatever. You know, whatever, man. You wasn't really feeding that money back to your folks.
Yeah, and the saddest thing about it is that still plays so well, because that's what they assume anyway. So that's why that still plays. But just speaking like you're thinking, man, we're going to get out of here in a second. Bars, did you want to throw any baseball out before we get out of here?
Man.
Nothing?
Nah, man, I ain't got really nothing to say on baseball, man. Pujols hurt. Yeah, 4 to 6 weeks. That's about it, man. It's still 162 games, man. We talk about baseball when August, September come, man. when things come down to the wire, man.
That's what I told you.
So what the hell are they playing the games for, man?
I mean, they got to play the games. You got to let the string play out, man. Really, you can't really say too much, man. I mean,
man, cut that joint to 50 and let it ride, man.
Nah, man, they can't cut that shit to 50, man. They could cut it, the least they could cut it back to is probably like maybe 140 games, man. You know, 130 or so. But there's a lot of games that got to be played, man. It's just, that's how baseball is. They play in series, man. You know, a series tells, you know, like you play 3 games, the best out of 3, that tells you if you're better than that team. You play 1 game, that don't really tell you nothing if you're better than that team, man. They play, you know, they play in series, man. So that's why you got 162 game season, man. That's a long ass season, man. When you sit down and think of it, what is it? April? It starts with April. That shit don't end until October. God dang, that shit's a long time.
That's a long ass season, man. So yeah, man. Basketball and football are in off season, I still feel like we threw some topics together and put together a little show for y'all, man. Download it to your iPod. Check us out. Speaking Like You're Thinking Radio. Check out Gordon Robinson at G Robinson Sports at Twitter. And you can catch Barzy here on Speaking Like You're Thinking every Wednesday night at 10. And, hey, thank you, Jennifer, for coming on, man.
Speaking at 10,
like always.
Anytime, brother. Anytime.
That's what's up, man. And we up out of here.
All right, man.
All right.